The recent surge of environmental awareness in North America is unmistakable. It has been documented by many researchers and widely reported in the popular press. The rise in green marketing claims has also been well documented. Less studied is the apparent increase in greenwashing, false or misleading green marketing claims. CJMQ welcomes Scott McDougall today of TerraChoice Environmental Marketing Incorporated.
You are a marketing strategy group called TerraChoice Environmental Marketing Incorporated. Okay. I was reading the six sins of greenwashing. It's quite amazing. Would you like to tell our audience just exactly what greenwashing is?
I'd be happy to. Greenwashing is not a term we invented. It's been around for a couple of decades. It's environmental whitewashing. It claims about a product or a company that are false or that are misleading or that risk misleading their intended consumers. And in this study that we did in a number of big box stores, we found that there's a high frequency of greenwashing today.
Okay, so you went and did a study in several box stores. About how many box stores was the study with?
We sent researchers to six big box stores in Canada and the United States. These are all brand names. There would have been one in a grocery store, for example, and one in a do-it-yourself home hardware store. We asked those researchers to inventory all of the environmental claims they made or they could find on the shelves, and we found environmental claims totaling just over 1,000 products and almost 1,800 environmental claims in total.
Okay, and all different sorts of products, right?
Yeah, consumer products entirely, but ranging from household goods like toothpaste and personal care products to paper towel, facial tissues, lubricants, cleaning products, that kind of things that we would encounter every day.
Okay, so how did you come about to do this study? Government grant? Or?
No, we did this. We're in the business of helping genuinely greener products win market share. We principally deliver a program for the federal government called the Eco-Logo Program, which is the certification of environmental leadership in a product category. And that had caused us anecdotally to believe that there was an increase in greenwashing in the marketplace, and we wanted to help consumers and marketers get better at this together. It's important to me to point out that we don't think that marketers, generally speaking, are deliberately trying to mislead. We do think that environment is a new issue both for consumers and for marketers, and that together we need to get better about making this communication really transparent and helpful.
Okay, so you found six sins of greenwashing, so we'll go through a few of those. The sin of the hidden trade-off, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So you're right. The way we arrived at this was we found all these claims, and then we tried to sort them into patterns. And the first pattern, I should say the most frequent pattern we found, we've called the sin of the hidden trade-off. I can give you an example. We all have paper towel in our home, and very often we see paper towel marketed as green on the strength of just one environmental issue, meaning most commonly recycled content and sometimes the sustainable forestry practices behind the paper. But we know that paper is a complicated product and the environmental issues associated with it are complicated, and that whether or not it has recycled content or comes from a sustainably harvested forest, the milling practice has water pollution and air pollution, and there's energy efficiency issues, and there's global warming issues. And so for a manufacturer to say the product is green based simply on its recycled content is disguising from the consumer the possible trade-offs between recycled content and all of these other issues. In a way, it's like the magician who draws your attention to his left hand so you can't see what his right hand is doing. And we called this the sin of the hidden trade-off. It accounted for about 57% of all of the environmental claims we've found in the marketplace.
Okay, so that's the number one percentage.
That was the most common one.
Hidden trade-off, okay.
Yeah.
So, for example, we could be buying paper towels that we think are recycled, and maybe the manufacturing process is, costing more than it would for if they weren't recycled. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's not to say that recycled content is unimportant or that sustainable forestry is unimportant. It's just to say that we think it could be misleading consumers to say that the product is green based just on that one issue.
Okay. And is there one specific type of product that would maybe stand out, such as paper towels or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, paper towel is the most common example we found. It's also true when consumers are looking for some technology, some office technology, for example, that advocates energy efficiency. And there are some important other issues associated with high technology, including heavy metal use. And so energy efficiency is not the only issue associated with office technology. It's useful for consumers when they see an environmental claim that seems to be just about one thing, to delve a little deeper, if they have the time, and ask themselves whether or not intuitively for them this one thing is the only important thing, environmentally speaking, about that product.
Okay, so that's the hidden trade-off. What about the sin of no proof?
The sin of no proof. This is in a sense, self-explanatory. Here the challenge for marketers is that marketing environment is different than marketing something more subjective. It's different than flavor or comfort or fashion or color. Environment has to be about an empirical truth. I tell you that I have low sulfur emissions, for example, or that I have no phosphates. Well, that is either true or false, and we think that it needs to be backed up with evidence that the consumer can have access to that will prove the point. So if we found a claim for which the manufacturer didn't offer evidence, then we considered them to be committing this, what we call the sin of no proof, and at risk of misleading the consumer. I want to point out, we didn't expect this proof necessarily to be on the label or in the brochure, because good green marketing also needs just to be green marketing. It can't be boring. It can't be overly detailed. But we did expect that if we went to the product website, for example, we would find this evidence, or if we called a 1-800 number, we'd have access to it. So these products that were considered committed the sin of no proof, which included, for example, household lamps and lights that claimed energy efficiency without giving any supporting evidence, or again, facial tissues that claimed recycled content without providing it. If we couldn't find the evidence by going to their websites or calling a toll-free number, then we consider them to be committing the sin of no proof.
Okay, so if we buy a shampoo and it says it hasn't been tested on animals, how do we know for sure?
Well, there are some international organizations that certify whether or not a product has been tested on animals. Google on no animal testing would bring up the website for that. So in our research, if they claimed that and they didn't offer a certification, then we went looking for it. And if they did offer a certification and we went to that organization and didn't find the product listed, then we were concerned.
Okay. And you found a total of 454 products, and approximately 26% of the environmental claims committed the sin of no proof. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how does that differ a bit from the sin of vagueness?
Yeah, it's a good question. The sin of vagueness is one that we can all relate to, I think. In the case of the sin of no proof, we were just looking for... The claim itself might be very specific. It might, for example, say 50% recycled content, and we looked for proof of the claim.
Okay.
Sin of vagueness, in contrast, might be a claim that simply said recycled content without giving any specific information at all. More commonly, we see terms like all natural, or we've all seen these things, eco widget, environmentally friendly gadget. These often are actually the brand names of the product, or sometimes they appear as descriptors of the product. All natural is meaningless, of course, because there are many natural things that are hazardous. None of us would choose to have arsenic in our shampoo or uranium in the product that our kids play with. These are uranium and arsenic and formaldehyde are all natural products. It doesn't make them safe.
Mm-hmm.
that these terms are appealing, but they're so vague as to be meaningless. And so if we found the term chemical-free or all-natural or anything like it on a product without the manufacturer explaining exactly what they meant by that term,
mm-hmm.
then we consider them to have committed the sin of vagueness. And all-natural was a particularly common one. We found it on hair mousse and shampoo and shaving creams. Insecticides that are sold as chemical-free caught our attention in this regard because, of course, we're all made of chemistry.
Okay.
Nothing mm-hmm. can be conceivably chemical-free.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if the term was explained, then we wouldn't have considered them to have committed this sin of vagueness.
Okay, and it's interesting because, as you said, I read in the report, chemical-free. In fact, nothing is free of chemicals. Water is a chemical.
Mm-hmm.
All plants, animals, and humans are made of chemicals, as
mm-hmm.
any product is, and non-toxic. Everything is toxic. As you mentioned here in the report, salt, water, oxygen can all be potentially hazardous.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Okay.
In fact, some of these terms, non-toxic, for example, have been defined by international agencies. So non-toxic does have, in some circles, a specific definition. So if a product said we're using, for example, the OECD definition of non-toxic,
mm-hmm.
again, then we let them off the hook.
Okay. Okay, good. Now, let's go into a little bit of the sin of irrelevance.
The sin of irrelevance is an interesting one. It was one specific example, but let me tell you what we mean first of all. A claim could be truthful
mm-hmm.
and yet not really help the consumer find a greener product, particularly if it is claims a green attribute which never had anything to do with the product in the first place. Using health as an example, we sometimes see low-fat tomatoes advertised. Of course, it's true to say that tomatoes are low-fat, but tomatoes never were high-fat.
Right.
So it's not a very useful, and we would say it's an irrelevant claim.
Mm-hmm.
In environment, we found irrelevant in particularly claims about a particular pollutant called CFCs, or chlorofluorocarbons. Now, CFCs once were an important pollutant in consumer goods because they contribute to ozone depletion. Happily and thankfully, about 20 years ago, they were made illegal in these products. So we know, at least we assume, it's quite true when aerosols today or oven cleaners or shaving creams tell the consumer that they are CFC-free. That's quite true, but it's only true because it is illegal for them to contain CFCs, and therefore it is quite misleading, we think, to use CFC-free in a way that makes it look like that's a greener product.
Okay, right, for sure. Now, the sin of lesser of two evils, that's so interesting, too, because in the report you mentioned organic cigarettes.
Organic cigarettes is a great example, and,
mm-hmm.
and it's also been suggested to us over the last few days that another example might be the fuel-efficient SUV.
Mm-hmm.
Here we're talking about claims that, again, they're probably true, but they are only true in a relative way within a category that is essentially, if you will, brown.
Mm-hmm.
And within a brown category, we suggest that it really is wrong to suggest there's a green choice. Or using the tobacco example, we think that there are so many environmental and health consequences to smoking as a whole that it's wrong to suggest to a consumer that they can be green by choosing organic tobacco. At least it's wrong without first suggesting that their first decision needs to be, really, should I be supporting tobacco or not? Should I be smoking or not? Or in the case of SUVs, we think a better marketing strategy would be to help the consumer confirm that what they really need is an SUV, because it is undoubtedly true. There are some applications for which an SUV is essential, some off-road applications, maybe some utility applications. And if you absolutely need an SUV, you, of course, should choose the greenest alternative. But most of us don't actually need SUVs. Most of us don't actually need perfectly manicured lawns. And so it might be wiser to use no insecticide rather than the greenest insecticide, or perhaps to choose a smaller vehicle rather than use the most fuel-efficient SUV. So the sin of two evils goes right to the heart of making consumer choices at their root.
Okay, great, for sure. Now, there's also the last one, the sin of fibbing.
fibbing, right? Lying. Mm-hmm. And so the sin of fibbing, thankfully, I'm happy to say, we found this was the least frequent sin that we discovered in our study. It accounted for only about 10 products, less than 1% of all of the environmental claims. Arguably, outright lies are hardest for the consumer to detect. But what we did is, when we found a claim, we looked for evidence, and if we found evidence to the contrary, then we consider the product to be committing the sin of fibbing. The most frequent, in fact, I think in this case, the only occasion was products that claimed to have been certified or registered to a third party, such as Energy Star,
okay,
which allowed us to go back to the Energy Star site and on their listings look for the product that claimed to be Energy Star rated. And if they weren't, then we concluded that there was a potential falsehood involved, and then we categorized that as the sin of fibbing. Again, not very common, thankfully. In fact, our speculation is, not just speculation, I should say, we work with marketers day in, day out, and believe that most marketers are genuinely trying to deliver greener products in response to consumer demand. But it's a new challenge, and mm-hmm. marketers and consumers need together to get better at it.
That's right, and we're so, you know, programmed to look for symbols, and not necessarily all the symbols are going to give us something that's the most environmentally advantageous, such as the Mobius loop that the product is made from recycled material. Now, what should we be looking for? What types of symbols and just information on the product as consumers, first of all, should we be looking for?
There are two important things, I think. One is that consumers take advantage of some of the tools that are out there to help them cut to the chase very quickly. The federal government's Eco Logo program is a great place to start. The Six Sins study can also be found at ecologo.org, but Eco Logo is itself an internationally accredited program with a couple of important features. It looks at all of the environmental issues of a product across the life cycle of the product. The criteria are transparent, and claims against the criteria are third-party verified. There, in North America, there's another program of the same type. It's called Green Seal,
mm-hmm.
Which is at greenseal.org.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, not all products that are genuinely green have either the Eco Logo or the Green Seal. And so one of the reasons that we did this study was to put what has become the Six Sins, to put this as a set of tools in the hands of consumers so consumers can begin asking these questions. You know, does this look like a hidden trade-off? Am I being offered only information on one aspect, and what might the other aspects be? And if I go looking for further information, if I have the time, if I go looking for further information, is it easy for me to access? Because if it's not easy for me to access, then it may not be fair for me to conclude that it's absolutely trustworthy.
Okay.
So between the Six Sins of Greenwashing, between programs like Eco Logo, both of these things are at that site, ecologo.org. We think consumers can gradually demand more and better marketing, and we think that marketers will respond. The very last thing that we would want is for consumers to give up hope and become jaundiced or jaded about green claims.
Mm-hmm.
There's reason to be skeptical, but there's not reason to give up by any means.
Okay, because it's so important, as you say, the marketers are trying their best. It's just to get there. So if we, for instance, buy some shampoo, we can look for the Eco Logo
mm-hmm.
on it, or the Green Seal?
Absolutely. Look for Eco Logo, look for Green Seal, look to see through the claims. And,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you can do this in the supermarket, sometimes you can do it in your home, and sometimes you can do it very actively by communicating with marketers. But marketers are intelligent, and when you decide not to buy their product in favor of something that looks to you to be more genuinely greener, then they'll
mm-hmm.
get that message.
Okay, so I should add probably that not necessarily everything in a health food store, for instance, the food or the beauty products, whatever, are necessarily that eco-friendly.
I think two things are fair to say. It's
mm-hmm.
fair to say that a health food or an eco product store is probably more attentive
okay.
than the average store would be to the legitimacy of the claims. But but maybe not to the satisfaction of every consumer. So I think at the product level, consumers need to be careful and scrutinize. And it doesn't mean, of course, this needs to be a new hobby for them.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers lead busy lives as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it is important to the extent they can that they make their product selections based on the most genuine information they can get.
Okay. And now let's see. Are there any government regulations as far as products are concerned about is there a step to making them more eco-friendly, anything like that?
Well, not specifically. Short of regulation that actually goes to what is in a product, which isn't really about marketing per se.
Mm-hmm.
The Consumers Affair Branch federally does have a set of guidelines on environmental claims. Those are useful, but they're just guidelines, and I think they tend to be quite complex. It's actually one of the resources study,
mm-hmm.
but we wanted to make them simpler, and so these six sins reflect the Consumer Affairs Branch guidelines on environmental claims, at least in part.
Okay.
And the Competition Act federally stipulates that marketing claims may not deliberately mislead consumers. So as a catch-all, there's this prohibition on misleading marketing. To my knowledge, there isn't a great deal of regulatory activity along green marketing per se. Again, because I think that I think that consumers can be very effective. And in some measure, what we're trying to do is encourage ever greener innovation. And I don't think that regulation is a good way to encourage innovation.
Okay. So how would you go about suggesting that then?
Innovation, I think, is best encouraged by systems that reward it positively. And that's why our work is so emphasized on the marketplace, on how marketers, because one of the nice things about the marketplace and about these guidelines in the course of the six sins is that there's no one end point. There's no point at which a product becomes green, period.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a process of continual improvement and of continual learning, and consumers and the definition of what makes a greener product will continually evolve. That kind of innovation is best addressed through marketplace tools so that there's this process of leapfrogging. You know, this year's green product may not be as green as next year's, and business is put in the position of competing with one another over which is the greener thing. That process of free enterprise and competition and innovation is more likely to drive the continual improvement of environmental performance than regulatory intervention around minimum performance levels is likely ever to do. So again, I'm afraid I'm saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers, by increasing the pressure, will drive more innovation than regulation ever could.
Okay, that's interesting. When was the study done?
It was done we were actually in these stores in March of 2007.
Okay.
And we published it this year, and we hope to do it again next year. And we expect to see some gradual improvement in things over the years.
Okay. Did it just get published, or has it been published for a few months?
No, it was just published this week.
Okay.
Not for any, I have to admit, not for any good reason. It just took us a long time.
Mm-hmm.
This is not our mainstay, and we did this, as you pointed out, without any other investments, so we had to make time for it.
Okay, good. Have you gotten a lot of people since you published this? A lot of people phoning you, contacting you, or...?
Yeah, it's been quite extraordinary. Far surpassed our expectations, and I think is a sign of the appetite for this kind of information and tool. Let me give you some evidence of it. On Monday, when we Googled the six sins of greenwashing, we had about 150 hits on Google, and today, before I came back from lunch, we had about 35,000 hits.
Wow. Okay.
The pickup has been impressive, and that's one way of measuring it. Another way of measuring it is that from at least one industry group, we've had suggestion that they may be legally unhappy with the suggestions we've made. So that suggests to us that we might be doing something right.
Okay, great. Was there any particular product that stood out as being the most eco-friendly?
Well, you know, we didn't examine the product. Bear in mind, we didn't examine the product themselves.
Okay.
It was the claims that we were, the way the marketing was undertaken that we were concerned with in this case. So, again, we're not saying that in this 1,000 products there weren't genuinely green green products. There was one product that we found didn't commit any of the sins of green marketing.
Okay.
It was a paper towel product from a company called Cascade,
which
is a Quebec manufacturer.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay. Now, we've heard a lot about, in the past few years, there's been a lot of books written about the pet food industry. And did you find any of the pet foods or the marketers were, you know, making all the six sins of greenwashing, or was that about equal to the others?
Oh, boy, I don't even know. I'm just looking at our list. I don't think we looked at any pet-related products.
Okay, that's
interesting.
Or pet
food.
Okay.
Was
there a reason why, or?
No, it just means that we didn't encounter any, well, I suppose, yes, the answer is yes, there was a reason why. Mm-hmm. We didn't encounter any environmental claims on those products. Two things are true, and I have to admit I don't know, so I'm speculating a little bit. Either we simply didn't, it happened that at the stores that we went to there weren't any pet food products, or we didn't see any pet food products that were making environmental claims.
Okay.
In any case, I'm just looking at Appendix A to our report. There are no pet-related products there.
Okay, great. Now, any other concluding thoughts on the study, or...
Well, my concluding thought and message is that we think that business and commerce and the convergence of consumers' interests and marketers' interests is a hugely, hugely powerful tool for accelerating environmental progress. And so the last thing that we want is for either consumers or marketers to give up on this. We do think that misleading environmental claims will eventually lead to consumer disgust, and that would be a terrible thing because then consumers will stop looking for greener products and stop accelerating innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that consumers and marketers stick with it. We hope that the six sins will be a shared vocabulary in a sense that consumers and marketers can use. So my message is to both your business listeners and your buying listeners, don't give up, keep at it. And let's get better at it because our families and our communities and our planet will be better for it.
Okay, so there definitely is interest. I guess we can take that from there with all the hits on your website as far as the marketers and the consumers are going, so that's great. Okay, well, we thank you very much, and do you have plans for another study? Or?
Next year, we hope to, and I don't know when exactly. We'll follow up, and there's always ongoing market research here, and all of that is accessible via ecologo.org.
Okay, ecologo.org. Okay, that's the website. Okay,
great.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Scott, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, thank you, Maureen.
Thank you. Bye.